So how are you, Tim?
How are you?
We decided that we're going to do a bit of a 60-40 sort of 50s rock and roll show for you. Seeing as you come up all this way. Anyway, that was it. So thanks for coming along, and we'll see you soon.
Bonjour, welcome to Melting Pod, Sound and Colors from the Planet Marseille, today February 17th, a podcast about the All Tomorrow's Parties Festival in Australia, where last month two of my favorite bands performed with their original lineup, The Sands and The Laughing Clowns. The common point between the both bands, you can maybe find yourself, is that Cooper. But if I published last month two podcasts about The Sands' history, recorded with him. The interview was, in fact, an old interview from 2007, and I didn't speak with it since June 2008. Maybe you can think I am a little obsessive, but I'm very happy because last week, exactly Friday 13, I read that somebody in the world seemed to share the same obsessions as me. It's Nick Cave, who invited Ed Cooper to play guitar, but this time in the bad seats during the Summer Festivals tour in Europe. We start with it about that recent news, and we spoke about The Sands last show in Australia. In the second part, we spoke about The Laughing Clowns. Right now, one of the clowns' song, New Burley in the Town. Hello, Ed?
Annie, very punctual.
Yeah, I was even at 8, but I have an echo, and I have to start again. But I was really exact this time.
Yes, you were. Goodness me.
Yes. Ed, I want to know a little about this last information. I saw that you joined the Bad Seeds for the Summer Festival in Europe. And I was very surprised because it's a long story with Nick Cave and you. Since last year, he invited you to the last tour in Europe with him. with the Bad Seeds, and then he invite you to a U.S. tour. You couldn't do it, and then he invite you at the All Tomorrow Parties Festival to reform the Sense and the Laughing Clowns. And now, this time, he proposed you to join the band.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you send him a charm?
Well, I am a very charming person, but I don't know. I think it's just circumstance, really, because Mick Harvey, who was sort of one of the founding members of the Bad Seeds, left at around the time of ATP, and so they asked me, and I agreed, and you know I'm happy to do it. I think they're a great band, and I think it'll be a lot of fun and really good.
But the proposal is only to play the summer festival in Europe.
Well,
that's
what we've talked about at the moment. So, you know, I guess we'll see where it goes from there. But that's all that's been discussed so far.
And when will you arrive in Europe this summer? When starts the rehearsal?
Sometime at the end of May, early June. It's not that confirmed yet.
And the country you are visiting, you have an idea?
Yeah, very vague. A lot of shows haven't been confirmed yet, but I think we're doing some things in England, in Ireland, there's some Scandinavian shows, I believe. Yeah, it's kind of all over the place, and I don't have an itinerary, and I don't think I could announce it even if I had it until it sort of gets some sort of official announcement. But there's going to be quite a lot. I think it's going over June and most of July.
Okay. Now we have to check the Bad Seeds website. To know more.
Well, I'll put them up on mine as well, but at the moment I can't really be more specific, I'm sorry.
And did you are ready to wear a suit like the Bad Seeds now?
I haven't given that any thought yet.
But you know, it's.
I was thinking. You know, shorts and Hawaiian shirts, maybe. But I haven't given it any thought.
I have a last question. I know that maybe Nick Cave observed you during all the time you spent together during the last tour. But I think that you, on your side, you observe a lot the Bad Seeds. Have you a special musical affinity with them now? Can you imagine you can co-write songs with Nick Cave in the future? Is it possible?
Well, I've always had a lot of regard for Nick as a writer and as a performer, and as far as actually co-writing things, I have no idea. It's sort of way too early to really even contemplate anything like that at this stage. I'll be playing guitar on songs that he and the band have written, so that's kind of, you know, and I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be really good. It's not something that I do very often, and
it's the first time, maybe, no?
I did one show with a group called The Apartments, which were led by Peter Milton Walsh, who at one stage was in Laughing Clowns, and I did a show with him where I basically played his songs.
And it's the second time in your life, in fact.
Yeah, but that was a long time ago, so, you know, I've forgotten how to do it.
Saw the left hand claims a right hand clause. The former
25 years, ladies and gentlemen, here we are. We are renowned for our experimental approach, ladies and gentlemen, and what we were endeavouring to do then was play two different songs at the same time.
Okay, and to start now with what was happening last month in January in Australia, you was invited by Nick Cave to perform the Sense and the Laughing Clowns with the original lineup. And how was it for you, physically and mentally, to play in two such different bands? What's your old bands?
Well, physically, I didn't have any trouble at all. In fact, I really enjoyed it. Mentally, I'm probably a nervous wreck, but I'm feeling quite good.
And to start with the Sense, after Big City, it was not too far away to start rehearsal again. How many rehearsals did you do?
Not all that many. There seemed to be some difficulty coordinating Chris's flights to arrive in Australia early enough, but we had a couple, and I kind of like rehearsing because, especially if you haven't played live very much, it enables you to kind of sort of push the limits of the songs a little bit. You can, like, in a rehearsal, it's not what I do in a rehearsal is I start to kind of play around with the structure of the songs and sort of see where things can kind of go a little bit. It's not so much a matter of just playing the song exactly the same way over and over. I actually like sort of once you sort of know how to play the song, then to just start trying little different things. Nothing necessarily that's going to be really, you know, altering it substantially in any way, but just to kind of make it sort of feel like the whole thing becomes a more flexible, sort of organic kind of feel to it, I guess. But that's what I like to do, but you need to have a bit of rehearsal to do that, or at least to be playing a lot live.
But in Melbourne, for example, you play the whole first album, I'm Stranded.
Yeah.
And the second song, One Way Street, is I was very seduced with that song, and I listened to the old one on the album, and I found it not so much interesting, and I think you improve that song, for example.
The funny thing with that, it's funny that you mentioned that, because the version of One Way Street that I played was the version that the band used to play before we actually recorded the first album. It's got a different introduction to it, and that's, yeah, just I sort of remembered it because I heard an old tape, a garage tape of the band, and was reminded that it had a different introduction. So I put that in just for fun, because I actually thought it improved things. It made a nice change.
Ah, in fact, I was more attracted by the oldest version.
Oh, were you? Were you? Well, probably the older version was performed better, but I think in terms of an arrangement, I like the introduction to the new one. Well, it's not new. It's. Oh, hang on. What are you saying? You mean the which one are you calling the new version? The new old version or the old new version?
No, I think the version I heard in the pirate recording at Melbourne.
You like that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of like the really old version. That's like the version that's before the first album version.
Yes.
But I do too. Yeah, I don't know why we didn't record that. I can't remember. It must have just sort of been something that.
I am sure it was. It will be a hit. You have to start again.
Yeah, well, look, that's a right suggestion.
Night in Venice, you told me the last time that you, strange sentence, you told me it's not a song, it's an experience, and I can't improve it. I was not sure to understand.
Well, it's what was I trying to say then? I can't remember. you know, it's not so much a song in the way that you kind of you know, sing along to a song. It's more of a sort of a sonic barrage of it's a sound, you know, and a kind of harmonic development that sort of happens with the way the guitar kind of works. So that's for me, you know. I mean, other people might feel differently, but it's when it works properly, Nights in Venice to me is sort of something that you almost can't sort of play anything afterwards. It just basically, when it's done well, it just should sort of leave everybody so beautifully satiated and exhausted that they don't want to do anything else.
But in Melbourne, I saw you play 16 songs and two encores after Night in Venice. It was really a festival for the audience.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, if we, for that show, we were just doing the first album, and the first album was only about 30 minutes long, and so it would have been too short to just finish there. So, we took a break and then came back and did some more songs. But ideally, Nights in Venice would finish the night.
But you let the people more frustrated in Brisbane, because I read you don't play that album, and the people was expecting it and was very angry when you even didn't sing I'm Stranded.
I heard that too.
Why did you do that? It was misunderstood with the promoters, who don't want to do that, or at the last moment you don't want to do that for personal reasons?
No, look, I wanted to do it. Chris didn't want to do it, and so I suppose we didn't do it because, you know, you can't sort of force somebody to do something that they don't want to do.
Okay.
Oh, you can, but, you know, that's not my way.
You are not a little whip?
quite possibly, but it's not something that I would employ in those situations.
Nothing was officially recorded during all this six show you play with the Sands?
That's correct, yeah.
And nothing is planned in the future?
For the Saints?
Yeah, for us.
You know, as you know, the Saints is these days it's Chris's band, and it's sort of an ongoing thing for him. There's nothing that we have planned to work together. But, you know, as far as Chris's Saints go, I imagine that they're going to be doing some things. But I don't know for sure.
Okay, and for you, the story is more turning in the direction the Laughing Clowns. What I see, you have new shows with the Laughing Clowns planned in May. It's the end of this podcast part one. As you heard, nothing was officially recorded for the Sands, and only the Brisbane show was recorded for the Laughing Clowns. So the live excerpt I play were recorded by fans. The first live song, Come One Come All from the Laughing Clowns, as well as Nights in Venice, were recorded at Montbulaire by Cranking Amps. And One Way Streets with the Sands in Melbourne was recorded by Creampies. Thank you to you both, even if the sound quality is obviously not as good as that song from the Clowns, for example, as your bridge burn behind you. I propose to you to listen to the part 2 with only the Laughing Clowns. You can write your comments on MeltingPod, www.meltingpod.com. Bye, tschüss, au revoir, à la prochaine fois, and stay connected with MeltingPod.
As your bridges burn behind you, a sound sleep where noise will never find you. I scatter your clouded thoughts to warm wind. The city will invade more surely. We'll be right back.